Sarah is, she gave me a modified bio, which I'm going to be talking about. And Sarah serves as the campaign's alliance manager at Oxfam, where she advocates for international development legislation and improved corporate practices to fight poverty, hunger, and injustice. Prior to joining Oxfam, she was with the Physicians for Human Rights as the director of outreach, leading advocacy on HIV/AIDS. And Sarah is a Truman National Security Fellow, and she's also one of our newly joined colleagues at the International Health Section leadership as the secretary-elect. So thank you, Sarah, for taking on that enormous job. It's not easy. And the floor is all yours. You have 15 minutes. And she'll be talking about women farmers first. Thank you. Even though you were third in the presentation, you're talking about women farmers first.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. How's everybody doing? All right. Talk about women. Nothing better than that. All right. I have no relationships to disclose except with my husband, who is lovely. Okay. So I am from Oxfam America. How many people have heard of Oxfam? We're based in Boston. Woo! All right. We have three main prongs of work. The first one is we do humanitarian aid. So if there's an emergency anywhere around the world, we're there, we're working with community partners, we're saving lives. Second, we do long-term development work. So we work with community partners around the world to improve agriculture, to fight for women's rights, to look at education and health care, and to build the capacity of communities to be able to fight for their rights. And finally, we believe that there are rules and laws that are in place that keep people trapped in poverty, and we campaign to change those. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. Our biggest campaign is GROW, and GROW aims to make sure that we can feed 9 billion people by 2050 equitably and sustainably. So when we talk about hunger at Oxfam, we don't actually talk about food per se, right? Because there's actually enough food in the world to feed every single person. Hunger is not necessarily about food, it's about power. It's about control, it's about human rights. So who controls the food system, the global food system? Anybody? Oh my gosh, I did not plant you. Okay, so in truth, there is nobody who controls the global food system. It's a whole patchwork of different organizations and groups, but the private sector, corporations, play a huge role in the global food system. So this is a cute little graphic. We've got 1.5 billion producers in the world who are growing food, and we have 7 billion consumers, and in between them is something of a bottleneck. So no more than 500 companies control about 70% of choice. That you have in the supermarket. And you think you have a lot of choice, right? Well, in fact, there's a huge amount of corporate control. Cargill, Bunge, and ADM control nearly 90% of the global grain trade. So everywhere, the private sector plays a huge role for good and for ill in the food system. So again, you go to the grocery store, you figure you have a lot of choice, right? This is a fun graphic. You probably can't see it very well, but these are the top 10 food and beverage companies in the world. You've heard of them. You know them. Nestle, Pepsi, Coke, Kellogg's, General Mills, and so on and so on. You know their flagship brands. Everybody knows Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is the most recognized brand in the entire world. But did you know that Coca-Cola owns Odwalla? You might know that. See, this is a good audience. You might love Ben & Jerry's for their social practices. They are owned by Unilever. Stonyfield Yogurt, very strongly founded on social justice practices, is owned by Danone. So there's a huge concentration of the food that we eat. And what's really important is that the food we eat here in the United States, it's not necessarily grown here. So if we enjoyed, how many people had a good Halloween? Anybody? What's your favorite candy bars? What? Snickers. Okay. Well, Snickers is owned by Mars. And that cocoa that you ate was most likely grown by a smallholder farmer. So the food that we eat, we have to think about that in public health lens here in the United States, but it also impacts communities around the world. And so Oxfam was really interested in probing the power of food companies around the world and their impacts on communities at the bottom of supply chains. So we looked at the top 10 food and beverage companies in the world. They're all here. Technical difficulties. And we launched a new initiative called Behind the Brands this past February. And Behind the Brands, again, fundamentally looks at what do the top 10 food and beverage companies in the world, what impact do their policies have on communities at the bottom of their agricultural supply chain. So we looked at 7 different indicators, again, really rooted in community, what is the impact that these policies have on women who grow food, farmers, smallholder farmers, and farm workers. And then we looked at some indicators that may seem to be sort of purely environmental, land, water, and greenhouse gas emissions, but they're not. They're incredibly rooted, again, in community rights. So do these companies have zero tolerance policy for land grabs, for water grabs? Do they protect the rights of communities to their land and water? And do they think about their agriculture and how their agricultural supply systems and how they contribute to greenhouse gas emissions, which contributes to climate change, which impacts poor women first around the world? We have a seventh indicator on transparency. So we think it's really important for companies to be incredibly transparent about their policies and practices, and they're not always. So we wanted to see how, you know, can you even access these policies? Do you even know sort of who you're supplying from? So this is the Behind the Brands scorecard, and you can find it online at behindthebrands.org. I encourage you all to check it out. But right now I want to dive really deeply into our indicator on women. So we like to say at Oxfam lots of things, including ending hunger starts with women. This is certainly not an exaggeration to say that women feed the world. Women are about 43% of the agricultural workforce, and in some developing countries it goes up to 80%. And even more importantly, women are most often in charge of subsistence farming and of feeding their families. They may do the work for cash crops, but they don't necessarily control that part of the agricultural supply chain. Also, as you may know, if the family doesn't have enough food to eat, moms often go hungry to make sure their kids can eat. They are the ones who are making sure that communities have food security. It's all about women. If there is any lingering doubt about whether violating women's human rights impacts the economic development of everyone, men, women, and children, the FAO came out with a report in 2011 that said if women farmers had equal access to land rights, to training, to education, to capital, to resources, they could up their productivity by about 4%, which doesn't sound like that much, but they could feed 150 million more people. So violating women, the rights of women, means that 150 million more people don't get enough to eat. Right? So we got to support women. Let's support some women. All right, so we really, really, really wanted to have an indicator that looked at women in the agricultural supply chain. So we didn't really care if Coca-Cola had a great maternity policy at their headquarters. That's wonderful. It's really important. But we wanted to know, how do they at all think about women in their supply chain? Do they intentionally source from women producers? Do they declare to improve the role of rural women? Do they have commitments to tackle the lack of women's access to resources? And do they actually have in their supplier code rules saying that you need to empower women? Again, this is critically important, one, for these companies. Gender empowerment leads to better quality, more productivity for these companies, and they've got to be concerned about their ag supply chains all the time. So it's a business decision, but we, in this room, we all know also that gender is catalytic for development, right? You empower a woman, you empower the world. So, okay, so we have this really cool, slightly complicated methodology for each of these indicators, and it's totally open data, so I encourage you to go to our Behind the Brand site. There's an extensive, crazy spreadsheet that you can just see sort of a little part of here. And we basically started off with the UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights. They have a sort of framework to assess business and human rights, and we built off of that. So we have four big sort of windows that we're looking at. The first one is awareness and recognition of the role of women. Do these companies even recognize in any way that women are a key part of supply chains and that they face discrimination? Do they have knowledge and disclosure of their impacts on women in their supply chain? Do they even know how many women are in their supply chain? Do they have commitments related to women in their supply chain? And do they have those supply chain management codes around women? Most of them did not. So just to go back, you'll see most of the companies came in at one or two on our chart. So I encourage you to check that out. The idea of the scorecard is to create a race to the top, so all these companies want to improve their policies and be number one on the scorecard. One of the ways that we're doing that is to do little mini campaigns about important subjects. So our first one was on women and cocoa. So cocoa, chocolate, is a $100 billion a year business around the world. But 90% of cocoa is grown by 5.5 million smallholder farmers in Ghana, in the Ivory Coast, in Indonesia, in Ecuador. So cocoa is very rooted in communities. And many of these farmers only make about $2 a day. So most of the profits from your Snickers, from your Reese's peanut butter cups, they're going to the company, they're going to supermarkets, they're going to, you know, moving the chocolate all around. So we did some research, and we talked to women cocoa farmers around the world, and, you know, in West Africa, they were telling us that they don't have land rights. They don't have access to the same kind of resources as men, and they're paid less for their labor and for their chocolate. So we really felt like this was a place where women were contributing to the global supply chain, where smallholder farmers are key, and where we wanted to make a difference. So again, women cocoa farmers, we found, were just having a daily struggle with inequality. So we decided to do a mini campaign on women and cocoa. And I'm actually going to skip that one. But we asked Mars, Mondelez, and Nestle, which buy 30% of the world's cocoa, to do impact assessments on women in their cocoa supply chain, commit to an action plan to empower those women, and then become advocates throughout the sort of global world of cocoa, and there is a global world of cocoa, to bring women into the supply chain. So this is the fun part. Then we jumped into corporate campaigning. We decided we'd take 3 months to do a big spike. So we had International Women's Day in there, Easter in there, which is the biggest chocolate buying holiday. So we were ready to have some fun. And the target was really the brands. So you know who these folks are, right? The brands are key for these companies. So we wanted to sort of target their brands and get people talking. So we did reports, research, and media that brought the stories of women cocoa farmers to global consumers, not just here in America, but around the world. We did visibility events at the launch. We were outside of the headquarters, dressed up like Oreos, doing all kinds of fun stuff around the country, and in fact, again, around the globe. We were at industry events, like the Confectioners Association Conference, having a race to the top. We did big International Women's Day Scales of Justice stunt in front of the M&M's store in Times Square. We did really fun brand manipulation. You can see this. This is probably the most fun. Handed out a whole bunch of candy bars with a slightly different message. A lot of social media. These brands live on social media, so we made sure to have a lot of activity on Twitter and Facebook. We had a very demented-looking Easter bunny deliver some petitions to Mondelez. I can't approve of that. And beyond the public work, we were also deeply engaged with the companies, talking to key personnel, negotiating back and forth, identifying their internal champions, and really arguing, and I do think they believe this, that gender equity is good for business. So all of those fun activities all around the world, we won. So after about 6 weeks, maybe 2 months, Mars, Mondelez, and Nestle's agreed to put a much bigger spotlight on women in their global supply chains. So what does this mean? This is the roadmap we made with them, and we are working together and holding them accountable to stick to it. So they've started their impact assessments, and they're starting to engage with other industry leaders, and next year we hope to see some action plans that can be put in place. So, you know, probably this work hasn't quite reached those women that we talked to in the Ivory Coast, but we hope that it will. And we hope that their economic lives and their health lives and all of their lives are enriched by better policies from these companies. And sort of the local global angle, I was with Representative Charlie Dent last year in Pennsylvania, and he told a story about cutting the ribbon at a Hershey Kiss factory, $300 million, huge driver of economic development in Pennsylvania. He cut the ribbon along with the Ghanaian ambassador to the U.S. Why? Because we are all inextricably linked. Our food systems, our rights, everything. So I encourage you all to learn more about Behind the Brands. I've got some information in the back of the room. And we do currently have another campaign spike looking at land rights. So asking Coke, Pepsi, and Associated British Foods to adopt zero tolerance policies for land grabs in their supply chain, which also impact women. So I have a little petition. I'm going to circulate it because I'm an activist and that's what we do. And I will take questions afterwards. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Sarah. And, you know, your enthusiasm was contagious. But I just wanted to say, I think you brought up a very important issue of food security and also that there is enough food in the world. See, a lot of people don't realize that, but thank you so much for bringing that and also